Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
One of the big industries and huge issues of our time is pornography. Since the internet, it's been basically on tap, reaching into our homes very often secretly, darkly, at the click of a mouse. It's claimed that 40% of internet users view pornography. 70% of children are exposed to it by the age of 11. It's now estimated to be a $100 billion industry. Yes, $100 billion. While its reach and power is truly incredible, very few people know what it's like behind the scenes. My next guest does, and he's in Australia educating us on some of the cold hard realities of pornography from the inside. For 9 years, Donnie Pauling produced pornographic films, and he's sharing his story through the charity Guilty Pleasure, which helps people with an addiction to porn. Donnie, welcome to Open House.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here. Donnie, you began working in the porn industry in 1997, in those very early days of most people accessing the internet. Has it surprised you how big this industry has now grown to?
It really isn't much of a surprise to me because, you know, that's one of our basic instincts is the desire for sex. God told us in his very first command to be fruitful and multiply. And whatever God loves that much, I think his enemy is going to twist into something that it's not meant to be. And so that's why we have pornography to begin with. So it doesn't surprise me that it gets this big because, I mean, what are our desires? We want to eat and breathe and then multiply.
Yes. So you say pornography is often portrayed as great fun, happy-go-lucky, and victimless.
Right.
What are the realities?
Well, that's absolutely not true. It's definitely not victimless. The people that I recruited into it, you would literally watch the lights go out in their eyes over time, and their lives would be absolutely devastated by the things that happened to them. It's something where a girl would be calling up and crying to me, asking to remove content from the internet of her because her father now doesn't want to speak to her anymore. She's always been daddy's little girl, but now he's so ashamed of her because, you know, for example, comes out of his work offices and finds a car covered with images of his daughter in ways that he never, ever wanted to see. And his buddies are right there with him when he sees it. Or, you know, some girls would be telling me, hey, you know, I was at university today and the trees were covered with images of me. People had stapled them up onto trees. And, you know, or I've been out at parties and guys treat me different. They grope me. You know, they treat me like a piece of meat because they think that that's okay. Since I did work for you, I must be a porn star and I must be easy. Or, you know, one girl that I created a website of, she was given a percentage of the profits and living a party lifestyle. And when she was passed out, guys would take what they wanted from her. They figured she's a porn star, so why not? She has a child now and no idea who the father is of that child.
How was it that you first got into this industry?
Well, I got into it because I had a really deep hatred of Christianity. And I pretty much wanted to do the exact opposite of the teachings that I'd been raised to believe.
Where did that hate come from?
I was a pastor's son. And growing up, I would see people who would act so holy during the weekends at services. And then I'd hear my parents talk about what was really going on in people's lives for the rest of the week. And especially as a teenager, I would feel like this is not something I want any part of. I hate this hypocrisy. And what's really hard to explain, I think, is what it feels like when you've been taught something your whole life and tried to live up to it, and it seems almost impossible to live up to. And then one day you realize in your mind, this is not true at all. You know, I've been raised to believe a lie my whole life. And that's how it felt as a teenager to see what was happening because, you know, God was always a list of rules and regulations in my household, it seemed like. You know, he's a reason I can't spend the night with friends or the reason that, you know, I had to wear long sleeve shirts to swim in. We were in a really legalistic denomination and God was never someone that I had a relationship with, just someone that wanted to take my fun away.
And you went the other extreme into pornography.
Right, and because that's as far away as I could get. It started with an interest in porn. When my wife was asleep or at work, I would look at it and then started thinking I could make money on this.
And the money was good for you?
The money was good. I started off part-time, hiding it behind my wife's back for 3 years. She didn't ask many questions because I started a business that was internet consulting, and she didn't know anything about internet consulting. She had no idea about computers and networking. And in the meantime, I'm actually producing porn and keeping it part-time so that she didn't find out. Kind of had to keep it really, you know, I would work very hard to do it so that she wouldn't know.
But she did eventually find out.
She found out because I told her. 2 years into it, I cheated on her for the first time, and I felt horrible because I love my wife, and I'd always promised myself I'd remain professional, and I just said, you know, if this ever happens again, then I'll come clean with her. So a year later, I did it again, and at that time, I took the opportunity to tell her what I was doing. I kept the promises to myself, even though I wasn't keeping my promises to her, and I called her up from a porn convention in Phoenix, Arizona, and I told her, this is what I'm really doing for a living, and that was it.
That was it for the marriage.
Yeah, she gave me the opportunity to go to counseling and maybe work on our marriage, but by then I was like, you know, now it's out in the open, I'm just going to run with it, and I just gave in to my hatred and took off.
You became quite a recruiter of young women.
I did. I was very good at recruiting. I had a style about me that seemed to put people at ease. I'm not an intimidating looking person, and so I'd walk up at the beginning. I'd just even walk up to people and talk in a calm voice and tell them what I did, and you know, and oh, hey, that sounds interesting, especially for the amount of money that you're paying.
Where did you go to recruit them?
Even at malls and at strip clubs, I'd go to the strip clubs, but the malls were where I preferred because I didn't want the stripper look. I wanted the girl next door look. I wanted to recruit the daughters of your listeners, basically. I say it that way, too, because I want to bring it home. These are just normal people. They're your daughters.
Were you surprised at how readily many of them agreed to do this?
I actually was surprised at that. I pat myself on the back for it is what I would do. I'd say I must be good. But really, it would be above 80% would end up doing it. Because we live in a culture that is what I call porn generation, which is, you know, anywhere that's 30 or younger, and you sit around watching porn with your parents. You know, that I don't mean literally watching porn. I'm just saying pay attention to the TV shows that we watch. They might keep their clothes on, but look what's happening in the show. And you're telling your kids that this behavior is wrong, but they don't remember words. They remember emotions. You're laughing with them at this. So it makes it easy for a guy like me to come along later and recruit them because you've made it okay and actually funny.
Can you describe to me those girls?
They're normal everyday college girls. I would try to find girls that didn't have tattoos. I especially love to find pastor's daughters with my background. If I found out a girl was a religious or the daughter of a pastor, then I would try extra hard to deceive her into doing this, and that's really what it was, is deceit. And I was considered one of the nice guys, by the way.
Yes. At what stage did you start to rethink what you were doing and why you were doing it?
When I started getting the calls when I'm on holiday and I'm realizing that my holiday is being paid for by others' lives, it would kind of get me a little bit. But I'd push it out of my mind. I had a new girlfriend, and she was like, yeah, so what? They're adults, you know, making adult decisions. But, you know, what people don't realize is that porn is not what you see on a screen. They don't show outtakes in porn. They don't show a girl curled up in a ball in the corner sucking her thumb because her mind's so blown by what she's just gone through. And they don't, you know, put in the credits that this actress had to have damage repaired surgically to her body, you know, because of what she just did in the scene because it's so abnormal. They don't do stuff like that. They don't tell you that. They don't tell you about all the lives that are hurt for this and the jobs that are lost. A girl goes and gets a 4-year university degree and then can't use it because she worked a few days for me while she was in university. And now she violated the morality clause of the companies that she's trying to work for.
Why did it then start to get to you, if you'd been so deeply involved in this up until now for something like 9 years? Why now?
Because there was a Christian group called Triple X Church that had really changed my opinion of Christians over the course of 4 years. They softened me up because instead of standing outside picketing and screaming at us and holding signs and telling us that we're going to go to hell, they went inside, set up booths, and they did things like put makeup on the girls who were paid by the porn companies to walk around in basically nothing. And as they were doing their makeup, they would say, "You are so beautiful. We think that there's more for you than this. If you need help, we have people waiting in the bathrooms to help you out of the reach of these men who are groping you and putting cameras under your skirts." You know, and then they would go into the brothels in Nevada where prostitution is legal, and they wouldn't go into the areas where the prostitutes worked, but the places where they stayed when they were off shift, they would totally remodel those, and they'd paint "loved" on the walls, and they would embroider "loved" in their sheets, and they took this loving approach and believed that Jesus' love would transform people, that they didn't need to be screamed at because deep inside they knew what they were doing is wrong, and that they just needed to trust that love of Jesus would change them. So as that broke down my hatred over the course of 4 years, I could no longer justify what I was doing.
It's an amazing breakdown.
Yes.
Considering that hatred, considering all the background of your childhood and what you'd been involved in.
Yes, it really was, because I would see them at these conventions and I would love them. I think that what they were doing was amazing. And then during the time away from conventions, I'd get full of my anger and bitterness again. So I'd go to their website and I would try to cause havoc there. I would be really insulting. I would post links to my porn sites. And in return, they'd had to ban me a few times,
yes,
you know, from
sure.
their site.
Yes.
But they said, "You're welcome to come back if you don't post the porn links."
It's the power of love.
Yes. Yeah. They said, and they had me on their podcast even.
On Open House, we're with Donnie Pauling, who's here in Australia with the charity Guilty Pleasure. Donnie, is there one particular story of someone caught up in this industry that you could perhaps relate to us that demonstrates the reality that you
Sure. Know? You know, I'll read you a letter from a girl who did what I call softcore porn, which means that she was in content alone, not interacting with someone else. And that was the boundary she set for herself. I couldn't lead her far down the path like I did some of the girls. Here's what she wrote to me after I was out of the business, where she's begging for my help. "Hi, Donnie. I have a huge problem. I'm getting married in a month, and my fiancé found my pictures on the internet. He is beside himself. He is hurt and shocked, and being that we're being married in a month, I'm suicidal, sick over this, throwing up, cannot sleep at all. How long do these pictures circulate? I know I did these pics, and yes, it was my fault, but I want to get them off the internet. Is there any way possible to do that ASAP? This will and is ruining my life. I'm fearful that his friends will see and torture him about it, or the people I work with in the military who are all men. I can't eat or sleep, and I honestly don't know what to do. This is destroying me. It's my fault. But it was a long time ago, and I was single, and I needed the money. But isn't there anything that you can do to help me now? My military career, and soon-to-be marriage, if he still will, is riding on this. Don't my pictures expire after a certain time, and you just put new ones up or sell new ones to companies that flush out old girls? I think you can read the desperation in this email. I'm completely desperate at this point, Donnie, and need your help. Please say that you can help me. Please."
Could you help her?
I couldn't help her. There's nothing that I could do because these contracts that are signed are so airtight. And long after she's a grandmother, the content's still going to be out there for her grandkids to find.
What does that do to you?
I try as hard as I can to find every one of the girls that worked for me and apologize to them. I know I'm responsible for this. I could see further down the road than they could. You know, people ask if I forgive myself, and yes, I do, because I know that God gives us grace, and it's like a big present wrapped up with a pretty bow on top, and he says, "This is grace." And if you can't forgive yourself, it's like giving it back to him and saying, "Your forgiveness is not good enough. Your gift is not good enough." And I have to remind myself of that, though.
How do you view the price our society, marriages, people's lives are paying because of pornography?
I think that most people don't really realize what they're doing to themselves. They don't realize how ridiculous it is to get so wrapped up in this garbage. And that's really what it is. It's not real. It's completely fake. Even the supposed amateur-produced content that's so popular is actually mostly created by porn companies because they know how to follow the money. So we're selling out for something that is so fake, and it damages our relationships over and over and over again. There's more and more psychological studies coming out in secular publications that just show that this even affects the brain in such a way that our young people are men who are incapable of functioning as they normally should 25% of the time when it comes to sexuality, just because they've been watching pornography for so long. You know, there's so many studies. That one was in Psychology Today where I read about that. That's not a Christian organization. This isn't just Christians saying, you know, God's onto something in the Bible where he tells us to flee from sexual immorality. Even secular media is catching on.
Yeah. How do you explain the addictive nature of it all? Why is it such an addiction for so many?
Well, pornography is a lot like heroin. It creates pleasure in your brain, and once you get that, you want to return to the high. And plus, it's, you know, as we said before, it's one of our basic instincts, you know. So not only is it producing a high, but it plays on something that we were wired to do. Just in a, you know, it does it in a way that we were never created to express in that area.
But it's never satisfied.
Absolutely not. I mean, you'll always need a little bit more and a little more, and pretty soon you're walking down what we call Porn Boulevard, and at the end, you know, never know where that's going to lead. This is something that twists us into knots.
If there are people listening now who'd recognize from what you say that they are addicted to internet porn or are being drawn into it in a way that's going to be damaging to them, what would you say to them tonight?
Well, first of all, realize that this is not something you can get over on your own. The Bible tells us that when we keep something in the darkness, that it becomes a bigger problem. But when we shed light on it, it removes the power of the darkness. So first we have to tell God about it. And it's not for his benefit. He already knows. It's for ours. We have to sit down and be very blatant about it. And then we have to bring somebody else into our life. Accountability partners. Sometimes you need professional help.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid of getting professional help. There's nothing wrong with that. Be completely accountable, completely open about it. Don't try to hide it and deceive yourself. And also, we have to choose to turn away. You know, it's sometimes we say, I know I shouldn't want this because I'm a Christian and the Bible tells me I shouldn't. But then it's secretly we want it, so we keep pursuing it. We have to reach a place where we choose we're going to turn away.
Where could people get help from?
One great place to start is at guiltypleasure.tv. The group that brought me over here is compiling more and more resources all the time to help people. It was founded by a guy who had to suffer through his own addiction that almost tore his family apart. And that's a great place to start here in Australia.
And we'll put the link up on our Open House Community Facebook page. Can I ask you finally, I think this is also an important question to ask, what would you say to someone who has not accessed porn?
I'd say, like Waldo, where are you?
<'Cause> I wondered whether you'd say that, yes.
When we take anonymous surveys, more than 90% of Christian men admit that they've used it, and more than 70% of Christian women, and the remaining percentages, especially of men, we have a word for them, and we call it liars.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that's wrong.
But, I mean, if you seriously really have never viewed it, I don't know how you're listening to this broadcast because you probably live under a rock, but congratulations.
I suppose my point is, even if it's in the early stages,
right,
to pull back from it.
Absolutely, because you know what? I sold my beautiful wife and one-year-old child out for $500,000 a year. I always wanted to be a father. I'm not there helping him with his homework now. I visit him on my visitation schedule. I never wanted to be anything less than a full-time dad. I sold out for that. What are you selling out for? Photographs and fantasy that aren't even real? Come on.
Donnie Pauling, thank you so much indeed for joining us on Open House.
Thank you for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.